this week on the Inside Flap.
I'll leave you, Your Highness, to have your lunch. No, come and join me. So I go back upstairs, and a lady waiting has got this big handbag. She opens it, and she gives Queen Camilla a thermos flask and a banana. And she pulls out a ham and cheese sandwich, which she gives to me. And so I'm sitting there. We're on two wooden chairs, with a wooden packing case between us, chatting away like sort of like old mates.
Oh, that's amazing.
I grab it with both my hands, and I yank it over to the wall where it seats in just perfectly. And the two kids are standing there. And the one kid, Landon, looks at the other kid, looks at me, and he goes, "Yeah, well, Dave's got that old man strength." What? What are you talking? What do you mean? Old? I didn't know if that was a compliment or I just certainly didn't take it. I think he might have meant it. He said it. He meant it as a compliment.
That is not a compliment. I did not. The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us for this Inside Chat edition. My name is Dave Etikis. Welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Laura Etikis.
Howdy. We have a cat.
Yeah.
Rubbing himself vigorously on the soundboard right now.
I mean, he's all over all the cables, all the wires.
The teeth haven't come out yet.
Rubbing his head all over the wires. very interesting. All right, welcome to the show.
The Inside Flap.
We have a great guest for you. We are joined by Peter James, a UK number one best-selling author, best known for his Detective Superintendent Roy Grace series, and he also just so happens to be Queen Camilla's favorite crime writer.
Wow, and, say that.
Yeah, yeah. He, when we talked to him, he told a great story.
He told multiple great stories.
He told many great stories. This is a great interview.
Yeah.
But in particular, I was thinking the one he talked about when he got to meet the Queen.
Yes.
Really funny stuff.
He is
good
a
stuff.
Very shocker.
Yeah.
He's a very good storyteller.
Yeah, imagine that. An author who's a good storyteller. And in fact, that's what I put on my notes for his new novel, that he is a born storyteller.
Yeah.
His new book is
got it.
Another fantastic Roy Grace book, and it's called One of Us is Dead. Before we start, got a quick shout out for you. So this past week, I made the teacher spotlight segment of our weekly school mini TV show, Angels on Air. Yep, turned out great, and I will post a link to it on our Facebook page. And this kid, so I'm just walking down the hallway after it aired and getting lots of compliments from people who knew me.
But my goodness.
A couple of days later, this kid stopped me. Her name is Nadia. Shout out to Nadia. Said she saw me on the segment where, of course, I plugged the podcast on the segment.
You did. Thank you.
Yeah. And this kid listened to the show. She loves the podcast. She subscribes. She's going to share it. So there we go. Got a new listener out of the Angels on Air segment. How about that?
That is awesome. Thank you, Nadia.
That's right, indeed.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know where you were going to go with that because I know Dave Metikus likes praise. So I just, I don't know.
Yeah.
So listener, he has a fan page account that has.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Kind of just sitting, well, I think the kid who started it perhaps graduated.
And she lost the password. She forgot the password.
And then he was so excited and after me to hit like on his own fan page.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I've got a business. I own my own small business. Mm-hmm. Does Dave Metikus ever like any of my business?
What?
No,
sure
no.
He does. He must.
I have to take his phone and go in and hit like on my stuff.
Man,
but anyway.
Yes. You want to plug your Instagram site then?
Yes, it is my name, Laura Metikus. Actually, hold on. I'm aware of the Instagram.
Oh, you don't know how to use it.
No. Yeah. Well, no, I don't remember. Yeah, it's just Laura Metikus. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I had the word interior design on it, but I do not.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can also check out david.howard.metikus.fanpage. So there you go, listeners. You got a full day on Instagram ahead of you. Got to talk a little bit about our Sweeney Todd production at East High School as we
Sylvia
open.
Sylvia and I are going to see it tonight.
Going to see it tonight. Opening night, Thursday night, October 24th. If you're...
When are you posting this, though? Today?
Yeah, we'll get it posted today. Okay. So anybody wants to come out to Denver East. You can just look at our Facebook page and we'll have all the information.
Yeah, or Instagram.
For tickets right there. But we have been working, so I'm the technical director for the show. We've been working incredible. We started working on this set, a two-story revolving rotating set that's 12 feet wide by 8 feet, or 12 feet long by 8 feet wide. We started working on this thing back in August, mm-hmm. and it's got platforms that lead out to it. We built in the theater an entire theater. It's a theater. It's theaterception.
I
it's
can't
a theater
wait to
inside
see it.
A theater. We got risers all over the place that are built up over the pit area, like stadium style seating, looking down at the action.
I know this theater. I'm super excited. I'm also glad that there's comfy chairs because I don't like the original chairs that are at the theater.
We got the hard wooden chairs. No, nobody likes those.
Oh, they're brutal.
We even ripped down the scrim in the back and built drywall up there.
Ripped it down,
I tell you. We got like what the kids are called diving boards to access the upper floor. Ladders everywhere.
Cool.
It's absolutely an insane set. I'll post pictures of the set when I get around to it on our Facebook page. In fact, we did our initial run through. The first run through we did was yesterday for a middle school. Maury Middle School came out and watched the show.
Maury Middle, okay.
It went great, and then at the end, I got lots of compliments about the set. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I'm standing there, and there's a woman, a parent, who I guess went along with the kids on the field trip. She's standing next to me, and she looks at me, and she goes, "Are you the guy who oversaw the construction of the set?" And I have a big smile on my face.
Oh,
I go, "Well, yes, I am." She points down at her feet, where there's a little, maybe 4-inch step down from where the seating is to the stage, and she goes, "This isn't safe," with just a deadpan expression. I'm like, "Okay, thanks so much for coming, and appreciate you taking the time out to point that out to me."
I
couldn't believe that.
People like that.
This is a little step down.
Also,
it's called a step.
Let's say, do you have any flashing on it or anything like that?
Well, now we do. I painted a big white X there. I put white X's all over the steps.
Yeah, I would put a flashing on it.
They're called steps.
No,
they're,
but here's the thing. Like, even if she wanted to tell you that, has she ever heard of constructive criticism?
Right. Time
say,
and
place. Hey, I love it. I love it.
Love the set.
You might want to put a little mark there because I tripped on it.
No, deadpan look, dead eyes. This isn't safe.
Well, tell her she is not welcome. Her son is not welcome,
welcome
at East High School next year.
He is barred from attending East. It's just been a lot. My memories from building the set. I remember I was working on the platforming, and we got these 8-foot platforms, and they got to be back up against the back wall there. And two kids, I watched them struggle to move this, and it's like, it's long. It's probably 15 feet long,
elevated,
bracing all over it to place it, to
push it.
Is
it like scaffolding? I'm picturing it like scaffolding.
Kind of like scaffolding, with a walkway on the top.
Yep.
And they're trying to push it. And it's only like 3 feet wide, so it's
it sounds like scaffolding. Yeah.
They're trying to push it up against the back wall. And I'm watching them struggle with it, and this is what I always do. Instead of helping them do it, I just go over there and go, "Well, watch out. Just move out of the way."
Sure.
Because I got to get stuff done.
This is what you do with me.
Right. I got to get stuff done.
But I will say also, I don't mind. Because I didn't want to do it anyway.
I grab it with both my hands, and I yank it over to the wall where it seats in just perfectly. And the two kids are standing there. And the one kid, Landon, looks at the other kid, looks at me, and he goes, "Yeah, well, Dave's got that old man strength." What? What do you mean? Old? I didn't know if that was a compliment or I just certainly didn't take it. I think he might have meant it. He said it. He meant it as a compliment.
That is not a compliment.
I did not. I'm 53 years old, Landon. I'll throw you across this room right now. I'll pick you up by my
hair. To him, that's old.
But I know that's old to him. But I just thought that was funny that he would bring that
down. Oh, that's hilarious. Old man strength.
Now,
have you ever heard that before?
Never heard that.
I've never
heard that.
It's fitting, though. I know what he means.
I do know what he means. And it means like, I know my own strength maybe or something.
I'm not going to tell you what it means.
Okay, all right. at another point, so we're getting down to cram. We were interrupted.
Old man strength.
For like 2 weeks by
part,
the.
Hang on. Part okay. of it is all right. you can have, it's men who have done physical labor their whole life, mm-hmm. and most, a lot of men have. Like maybe not the what stereotypical modern man,
right?
But a lot of men have. They've built things. They've worked jobs.
Worked construction.
They know, or they've just done stuff around the house. Right. They've manhandled things, pushed things through.
Yeah.
Like older men know how to get things done.
Right.
In okay. a way that a younger man might not
be too timid or
might
too
be too timid to do
yeah.
it. Hasn't okay. really worked with his back muscles aren't developed.
That's true. Now, we should yeah. point out, I'm a skinny guy. I don't have muscles.
That's exactly why know. I would say you have old man strength, is because okay. you're skinny.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got interrupted by the choir coming in there, and they had to do their performance.
Again.
And shout out to them. But we lost a lot of work time.
Yeah,
so we
right.
were backed up. So at a certain point a couple weeks ago, Micah, our woodshop professor, I almost called him
teacher?
A woodshop professor. The guy, Micah.
The professor of woodshop.
Now, here's the funny thing.
He has
his
a
last
doctorate.
Name is Miller. He's a Miller
oh, that's
who teaches woodshop.
Micah Miller?
Micah Miller.
That's mm-hmm. a cute name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's cute.
I'm sure
guy.
He wouldn't
yeah,
like that.
Cute. He walks around.
Old man strength, cute name.
All of us in the back, we got a bunch of male teachers in the back hallway. We all wear backwards baseball hats.
Oh,
and
do
walk
you really?
Around.
Those guys.
Yeah. yeah. Where are those guys? Old guys with the backwards
old man
baseball
strength.
Hat. Old man strength. Well, he offered up the services of his honors woodshop
that's
class.
That's amazing.
I said, Micah, that's fantastic. Great. If you could loan us out for a couple of kids for this block period, I got some advanced stuff I could really help your help with.
Yeah.
He said, I have a TA, he says. This guy's name is Hayden. He says, this guy has surpassed me as far as skills. He works in the field, and he's great.
Oh, after
he's a
school,
senior.
That's his
yeah,
job.
He works at for a construction company.
Wow.
He said, I'm going to send him down with a couple other kids. I said, that's fantastic. This kid, Hayden, well, first he comes in, and he meets me in the black box before we go to the auditorium. And he's like, I don't have my credentials on me, but I'm a certified this and a certified that. I'm like,
settle
Hayden,
down.
Calm down. I don't need to see any credentials.
Oh, wow.
He wears overalls.
Yeah, they do.
You know?
I know.
He looks like a construction worker.
Yeah, I got a guy. Oh, my gosh. I would wear them. They're really cute blue jean, like
right.
Levi
well,
overalls.
Like, his were like
Carhartt.
His
Carhartt.
Were like brown. I don't
yeah,
know
that's
what
Carhartt.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
great.
Yeah. No, that's
the
what
part.
They wear.
That's funny.
I know.
So,
did he have the steel-toed boots on? Because
he had boots. Yeah,
yeah
he
you're
did.
Supposed to wear
he
those too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He, I said, great, come on in. I take him onto the stage, and I see him start to look around.
Oh, no.
And I look around.
Is it a mess?
And it is. It's a disaster site because we got.
Oh.
We don't have a shop where we build stuff. We build stuff. Literally on the stage.
Oh,
so
you don't have a shop.
It's like our table saw, it just set up on a folding table.
I see.
On the, so there's saw, saw, there's saw. And I'm looking at him, looking at my job site. I'm like, uh-oh. And I just track his eyes as he's looking around. Cables snaking everywhere.
Unsafe.
Because it's not just a construction site. It's also
a
lighting set. A sound set. There are cables everywhere. There's people painting.
I'm having anxiety.
People building him. And I see him look, dart around, and he looks at me, and he's looking at me like, where he like he wants to see my credentials. All.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you think? He's like, I'm about to have an aneurysm.
Is that what he said?
He said, I'm about to have an aneurysm.
Oh.
I said, listen, we don't have to. He said, if OSHA was here, they would shut you down right now. I said, listen, take it easy. This is theater.
Wow.
We don't have to build to code, and that we can't build to code in the world. We have to work within the spaces.
Yeah.
Where, and he starts to get it, and he starts to understand. But it was like, okay. He said, "Why isn't anyone wearing a hard hat right now?"
Okay. What makes me nervous?
So he did.
Maybe you should do better cable
well, we
management.
Were, maybe, and we ever since when he came in, I was like, all right, we need to get a little better handle on this.
Yeah.
Because I just the kid. And I get so busy in what I'm doing.
No, I get it.
And I'm running. I'm because there's so many different things. Like we had to figure out the slide. So okay, and this is why I needed their help because
okay.
I needed their help on the trap door, getting the hinges.
Okay.
We have on the second floor. So if you know the musical Sweeney Todd, Sweeney cuts the throats. Spoiler alert.
It's a family musical.
He cuts the throats of his victims, and he sends them in, and then the barber chair unfolds and it goes flat and he sends them flying down.
It's also called the demon barber.
The demon barber of Fleet Street, right. Yeah. And he sends them down through a trapdoor, out a slide where they fall onto
like
the ground there.
A chute.
And Mrs. Lovett chops them up and turns them into pies. Is that, yeah, like a chute. Well, thank God, shout out to CU. We have a student whose father, Kai, whose father works for CU Theatrical Company, and he's in charge of the musical productions up there, the technical side of them. He donated us this amazing chair, this chair where it's got little levers to it, and it works as a barber chair. It leans back, and then when Graham is playing Sweeney Todd, activates the lever.
I don't know how you could have done it without that chair.
Couldn't have.
Yeah.
When he activates the lever, it goes flat, and then it sends the victim down through the trap door. So I was pictured initially, it would be at one end of the upper platform, mm-hmm. and it'd be a nice, long, 12-foot, gentle slide going out the other side.
Yeah.
And as I'm walking through it with Deb, the director, she goes, no, that's not going to work for the blocking. The chair has got to be over here, and she points to the left-hand side of it.
It's too far for them to walk.
And then it's just got to go shoot out like this.
Oh.
I'm like, Deb, they're going to go straight down. Well, we'll figure it out. It's not going to work otherwise. And when she has her vision, like, you cannot talk. Oh. And I tried to talk her out of it. You cannot talk her out of it.
Huh.
So we built a little trap door up there. And it's like, it's not a, like, what would be straight down? 90 degrees straight down.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's not 80.
Like 20 degrees though, right?
It's
like an incline, 20 degrees or something?
I get confused. Rise over run, slopes, I don't. Point is, it's literally almost straight down. And the first time when
It's got like an 8-foot rise with the run is like 3 foot.
There you go. Yeah. I don't know. I know the trapdoor sits at 8 feet. And then if your butt is in the chair, you're another 3 feet off the ground.
Wow.
So it's like 12 feet off the ground.
Wow.
And when we built it out of plywood, and then we put cardboard on top of it. We had little sides.
Super slick. The cardboard.
Well, we tried to figure out. You had a great idea to take half rounds. And stick half
speed
round
bumps.
Little speed bumps.
Yeah.
So they're to slow them down.
Well, they could also grab their feet catch on it.
And that's what so when I tried it, because I was the first one to go down it, and I figured out I could take my shoes and grab the sides. We have plywood for the sides, and grab the sides to slow myself down as I'm going down. So that worked like a champ for me. I mean, I could easily control my slide going down the slide. It went nice and slow, you know, just by using my feet to control my slide. And then at the bottom, we have some pillows in bags, so they're disguised as like sacks of flour. Now, what I failed to take into consideration was the kind of shoe I was wearing. I was wearing tennis shoes with nice grippy soles on them.
Yeah.
The actors, which I quickly realized when we got Cliff up there to practice it, they wear black character shoes which has basically all the traction of an ice skate. Just as smooth as satin on the bottoms of those shoes.
Are they dancing in this production? Is there a dance at all?
There's some light dancing, sure.
Some movement. Yeah.
There's movement. So we put Cliff up there, and he's sitting in the chair, and Graham's getting ready to release the lever to send him down the chute. And we're going to do it nice and slow at first. I'm like, use your feet. He's like, I can't. I said, well, figure it out. He is like, kids are watching from down below, and they commented on it later. I'm right there, so I can see it. He is shaking visibly like a leaf on a tree. Like his whole body is trembling. I'm like,
I'm trying to control his slide.
No. He's just so nervous about going
He's
down
nervous
the slide.
About, He's nervous. Oh, that's no good.
Because you got to imagine, they're up
that's
on this high
no good.
Chair.
It's incredibly high and it's a straight
shoot. And all you can look down, when you look down, you just see
dark
blackness underneath because it's all walled in. So you go down the slide through the blackness and out the hole in the side of the structure.
Yeah.
So you can't really see it. It's like a haunted carnival ride, basically. Except there's, except I'm the cigarette smoking guy wielding the operating the ride.
That's funny.
So he's shaking. And he goes down there, and it doesn't go well. And then we grab the other kids who are supposed to do it.
He had a right to be afraid.
Yeah, they can't control their slide. They're grabbing the platform with their hands, even though they're supposed to be dead.
Themselves.
They're bending their knees when they shouldn't be, so their knees bang into the platform. I mean, we're really struggling.
Self-preservation is key here.
So I'm realizing this is not going to work. And then finally I was like, oh, the sometimes the simplest ideas are the ones that never come to you at first. So I just said, well, wait a second. Down below where the slide is, the audience can't see it. So why don't we just get a couple of techies to stand there? And that's what we did.
Do they mind being called techies?
Oh, no, they love it. That's what we call them, techies.
What do you call the actors? Just actors?
Well, we call them many different things, but we can't say that on the.
What do you call them to their face?
Yeah, actors.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't call them like the talent or anything, do
no,
you?
No, hell no, we don't call them the talent. Good God.
Just making sure. I was just wondering.
Yeah, no.
Techies. I don't know if I'd like the word techies. No, I would have been a tech, but I don't know if I'd like being called a techie.
Yeah, no, they love it. Okay. So, but now we got Tess and Evo down there, and they're just grabbing the shoes, and it works perfectly. They grab the shoes, stop the fall, and they can slowly guide them.
Drag the body down.
Drag the body along the way. It works great. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah, so there you go. So, again, check our Facebook link for tickets to the show.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on with it. We are joined by Peter James, UK number one best-selling author. His new book out right now is called One of Us is Dead. I love this book. It's another great Roy Grace book. Now, this one starts out with a great premise when James Taylor is attending a funeral. And yes, they do mention the fact that he's named James Taylor, like the musician. This guy, James Taylor, is attending a funeral for an old friend when he recognizes someone who is there attending the funeral, another old friend of his. The odd thing about that is that the man he recognizes, his old friend, well, James Taylor just happened to have just recently given the eulogy at this guy's funeral not too long ago. So what is going on? Meanwhile, Roy Grace is working on a string of suspicious deaths that may just lead to this mysterious happening. As I said before, Peter is a born storyteller. Love his characters, lots of humor in this one, and a thrilling mystery. So here now, talking about his book, One of Us is Dead, this is Peter James. So we are in Colorado. I'm in Denver.
Oh, I love Denver.
Oh, really?
Ah. Yeah, I've skied. In Vail and a couple of times. I don't think I've ever been so cold in my life, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, Vail's up there, like 9,000 feet. We're about two hours away from Vail. What a beautiful place. I mean, if you're going to go skiing, that's where you want to go. Well, there's a lot of to ski here in Colorado.
I absolutely loved it. And it's a great city.
It is. Speaking to you right now, this year is the 100th year anniversary. This is the oldest public school in the city of Denver, actually. Denver East High School. How about that? Yeah.
Is it built of brick or wood?
Yeah, brick.
Denver likes to burn, so we are. Yeah. Anything
you had the big fire, didn't you? And then you
rebuilt fires. It. Yeah, and so it's all brick. Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing, you mentioned it, the original East High School did burn down. So this building is 100 years old, but the actual school predates this building. Yeah. So you don't want to mess around with any wood around here. No. No. Anyway,
well, it wasn't the pupils who burnt it down, and you weren't trying to kill your headmaster or anything.
That is not we cannot confirm or deny that the teachers might have had a hand in that as well. We don't know. We don't know what's going on.
Hi, Peter. Laura. Also, I joined late. My name's
Hi, Laura. Laura or Laura.
Laura. Yeah.
Laura.
Yeah, I'll answer to whatever though.
So. Well, my wife's Laura, so that's easy to remember.
Oh, that's great. Go. Hey, that's great. There's a few of us out there.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you.
And I'm Dave. I never properly introduced myself.
Dave, hi.
Well, welcome to the show. Peter, I absolutely loved your new book. This was a lot of fun to read. One of Us is Dead. This is a tale of sharks, cigars, and mushrooms. Peter, what was it that inspired you to write this latest installment?
Well, thank you, Dave. What happened? I I think like many writers, about probably what, once every 2 weeks, somebody comes up to me and says, hey, Peter, I've got a brilliant idea for a book you're going to want to write. And you know fine well that it's going to be a crock of poo.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has a story, but not necessarily one that's going to make a great novel that I want to spend a year of my life researching and writing. But on this occasion, it was about 2 years ago, and actually I'd been at a funeral, and the son of an old friend came up to me, and he said, Peter, I've got a story you're going to want to write. I said, John, I'm sure you have. No, no. He said, I promise you, I'm going to tell you this, and you're going to want to write it. So I had a coffee with him, and he said, a guy I know, and he's proper dodgy.
Proper dodgy. I love that.
I like proper dodgy.
I'm going to start using that, proper dodgy.
And he said he was at a funeral. 6 months ago, he arrived late. It was a country church. It was pelting with rain, and the whole church was rammed. There wasn't a single pew available. So he had to stand at the back. And halfway through the service, he notices a guy sitting six pews in front whose funeral he went to 2 years ago and gave the eulogy at.
Wow.
And I said, what happened? And he said, He tried to get to the guy at the end of the service, but everybody was standing up and it got in his way. And by the time he got to the exit, the guy had vanished. And I said, I have to write this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the one time, one out of every 100. If you get a banger of an idea like that, one out of every 100 or so, it's worth it.
I got a chill listening to you say that. If you get a chill and someone tells you a story like that, you're like, okay.
Yeah, and so it's funny, people often say to writers, you know, where do you get your ideas from? And I think many times ideas find us.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, yeah, because writers, they're not, you guys aren't like us, where I could hear a story like that and I think, wow, that's so cool. You're going to keep thinking about that probably after that encounter and keep thinking about it. Yeah.
I love that. That's when the magic kind of.
Yeah.
Just send them a copy of the book. I mean, have you done that, Peter?
I have done. Absolutely. I said, pass it to your friend and see if it matches what happened.
Yeah. And I love the funeral scene that you start out with at the beginning, and it starts, you literally write, I think it's in the second chapter, you literally write WTF, and you describe the cheesy poetry readings and the lauding of this person who was now dead, and maybe not the greatest guy, but people are talking about him like he is. Did you call that? Did you have like memories of funerals past that you called from for that?
Oh, so often, yeah. Where you've been to somebody, I mean, like Barney Wallace in the book, who I think I described as if there was a patron saint of losers, he would be it.
Yeah,
and then you have usually the clergyman or the celebrant who doesn't know this person from Adam,
right?
Yeah.
Kind of starts glorifying. I mean, that's great. I want somebody like that at my funeral who kind of glosses over all the bad things and just makes me the greatest living human being. But it is funny because how people are bigged up. And it's kind of weird that your funeral is one of the biggest moments of your life and you kind of miss it.
Gosh, that's true. I feel like people don't have, at least they don't have that many funerals anymore. Usually it's like, well after, and it's celebration of life, and it's a little bit different. But it is. It's a good party.
It's happening in England, too, a lot now. Yeah. That people don't want. I've had it twice this last 18 months, sadly, of two friends, both who didn't want a funeral. They just they wanted the after party.
Yes, the after party. It is probably a great party that you don't get to go to, like you said.
Yeah, and there are people now doing videos as well.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah. No, stop it.
There is a company in England that you can go, you know, film it before you die. It's like, hi, everybody. Hey, Uncle Bob, you grasping little bastard.
Wow.
I just hated you. Wow, that's crazy.
I hated you. You think you're going to get some of my money? Yeah, you're not.
Wow.
Oh, I would never, I could not do something like that. No,
I don't know that I could too. I couldn't make it through. But if you're a nasty person, I could see that it might be appealing.
Sort of revenge at a funeral.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You do have Barney. You mentioned him in the book, and you also describe him as, quote, being the kind of man who would come second in an election, even if no one was running against him.
That's great.
And that kind of sums him up really well. People like that, too, I always like to think if there's one squeaky chair in the room and everyone sits down, that person will get inevitably the squeaky chair. Yeah, there's just people like that. Do you have good moments of humor in this book? Did you have fun writing it? Is that just something that comes naturally for you that you just integrate? Or do you ever look back and think, oh, I need some more humor?
No, so it comes naturally. I think that, you know, I'm writing with my kind of mystery stories. I'm writing often quite dark subjects. And I think that humor is a great counterpuncture to it. You know, I want to entertain people. I don't want to depress people.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
You know, I'm trying to write, you know, mystery stories, but which have dark sides to them. But, you know, I go out with the police a lot. And I've gone out with the police for like 40 years for research. I've been out with the police in America quite a bit also over the years.
Really?
I've been particularly in New York many times and also in Los Angeles. And the police, I mean, all the emergency service workers, they see terrible things. But that kind of coping mechanism is humor.
Right.
You know, I remember going to a terrible car accident where I was out with the traffic cops, and this guy had rolled a car into a field, and he'd gone through a fence, and the fence posts had literally impaled him. I mean,
wow.
He was sadly dead. And the traffic cop looked down at him and said, well, his wife only sent him out for a steak.
Oh, my God.
Whoa, that's a good one.
Did he chuckle after he said that?
Because
I guess what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, you know, there is this sort of, it's a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there a difference, so when you go out and hang out with the cops here in America versus in England, like, is there a big difference, do you see?
Yes, I think cops in England really walk on eggshells these days. They're so terrified of being hauled up for being politically incorrect.
Mm.
Or, you know, if they're in a chase and there's an accident, they get arrested. It's almost like, you know, I feel very, you know, I've got a lot of friends in the police and you know, the morale is really bad. Whereas in the States, it seems there's much more support. Okay, there have been some bad incidents.
Right. Yeah,
but there's a lot more support. Mm. I remember I was two cops, if they are now retired, in the NYPD, and they were showing me how to spot pickpockets. And we were parked up in Times Square, quite near the heart on 42nd Street.
Sure.
And they were saying, you people walk at a pace. If somebody's walking faster,
mm-hmm.
They in England they call it the scoring walk. You know, they're on the way to do something dodgy. Or if they're walking slower, they're hanging back and they're looking for an opportunity. Okay. And we were in the middle of telling me all this, and this lady was trying to park a UPS van. And am I allowed to swear on your show?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So she's trying to park a UPS van into a narrow gap in front of this unmarked cop car we're in. And she's making a complete fist of it. You know, she goes back, she goes boom. She almost hits the front of the car, you know, fender's touch. And finally, this detective, friend of mine, he leans out the window and he says, "You're not driving a fucking elephant, lady."
That's so New York.
That's New York.
That guy would be out the force.
Oh.
In England.
Really?
Yeah, New York is tough.
Yeah.
And Denver is notorious for corrupt police, actually, here.
Still today.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. When you first started, like, writing a ride-along or things like that, were you surprised at the way it went, or was it kind of what you thought it would be, I guess?
Completely surprised. It's like, they're kind of... I mean, my whole interest in the police started when I got burgled.
Really?
Way back in, I'd written, I always wanted to be a writer, and I I kind of didn't know what I wanted to write at that point. And I read an article that was a shortage of spy thrillers. So I thought I could write a spy thriller. Ian Fleming had just died. So I wrote a spy thriller. And I made it all up. And to my amazement, I got a two-book deal. I'm only telling you the title so nobody ever buys it. It's called Dead Letter Drop. It was a dreadful book.
But it got you in.
Good deal, so.
He got me a two-book deal, and it totally didn't sell. And I'll tell you, anyhow, I'll just digress for 1 second. So, right.
I love it.
So this is, every now and then, I'll see somebody reading one of my books. And there's always that moment, do you say something or not?
Yeah.
My wife and I, we live mostly in the island of Jersey, but we have an apartment on the seafront in a place called Worthing, which is just along the coast from Brighton. Mm-hmm. And we always go for a walk about 5 p.m. Before I hunker down, I always hunker down to write at 6:00.
Oh,
and we're walking along the seafront, and there's a guy sitting on those shelters, and he's reading this book, Dead Letter Drop.
Oh.
And he's like, he's about 25, and he's turning the pages, and I'm wearing a Roy Grace baseball cap.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
So Lara, my wife, nudged me, and she said, go on. So I went up to him, and he sees me, he was turning the pages. So I said, oh, are you enjoying that? He said, no, it's absolute crap.
Whoa. He said, you are kidding me.
This is the worst book I think I've ever read.
Oh.
I'm going, he said, I cannot believe this author wrote this crap. And I'm standing there and he says, I'm only reading this because my dad was reading it when he died. And
I
thought I'd finish it as a tribute to him. And I wrote it. And he said, oh my God. He said, listen, you are actually my favorite author. He said, I would try to read everything you've written. I love your work, but how did you write this piece of shit?
Wow. His father was reading that book when he died?
Yeah, I hope he didn't kill him.
I hope he didn't give him a heart attack. I mean, goodness.
My dad was watching Jeffrey Archer's Cain and Abel miniseries on television when he died. He stood up, said, fuck this, and dropped dead. I told Jeffrey I blamed him for my dad's death.
No doubt. Yeah. That's
So then the book came out and it totally didn't sell back in 1981, and nor did the second one. And I was really despondent. And I poured my heart out to a friend who worked in publishing. Mm-hmm. And I said, obviously, I don't have what it takes to ever succeed as a writer. And she said, why on earth are you writing spy thrillers? She said, people who read are intelligent. They don't just want a story. They want to learn something. What can you tell anybody about the world of spies? You're up against someone like John Le Carre, who's come out the security services, and Ian Fleming.
Yeah.
She said, you've got to find something you're passionate about. And I went away really despondent. And a week later, we got burgled. And a young detective came to take fingerprints and he saw the two books and he said, oh, you're a writer. He said, I want research help with the police. Give me a call.
Wow.
And that was the start of it. He was married to a detective and we became friends. My then wife was a lawyer. And they invited us to a barbecue and they had a dozen of their friends and they're all cops.
Wow.
Response, homicide. And I just found these people fascinating.
Definitely.
And when they realized I was genuinely interested,
right?
They started saying, "Well, come out on a ride out with us." And it got to the point over the next sort of 5 or 6 years, I began writing psychological thrillers, putting the police in, and they liked the way I portrayed them. And they got to the point over the next sort of 5 6 years where they'd phone me up, so we're doing a raid tomorrow. Do you want to come with us? And they'd smuggle me into crime scenes as well.
Oh, wow! Awesome.
So I've had this amazing relationship for many years. It just gives me these great insights.
Well, did you ever catch the person who burgled? Robbed?
No, but okay. I funnily enough, it was about 4 years afterwards, and I was out on a day patrol, and there was a call about a burglar, because we were burgled like 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
There was a call from a somebody come home and they've seen this guy climb out of his window and ran off. And we drove around and we had a description of this guy. He's like wearing a green jogging, a green top, jogging pants, trainers. And there was this guy walking towards the crime scene. And I was single crewed, so I was just sitting up front with this cop. And he said, "That's the bastard." Wow. He said, "They'll often walk towards it to fool you."
And he
jumped out, and then he said, "Okay, can you hold on to him? Because I've got to get my handcuffs." So I'm standing there saying, I'm not a cop. I'm just an author, you know, and the guy's looking at me. I forever did wonder if he was the bugger that stole.
Oh, that's interesting.
So if you hadn't been burgled, who knows what you'd be writing?
That's right.
Yeah, still really bad spy thrillers, probably. You know, I always joke, it was the best thing that ever happened. I'd only just got married, and I can recommend being burgled to any newlywed because it gives you the perfect excuse to say, "Auntie, you know, that porcelain donkey with the quartz clock in it that you gave me, they took it."
That's a really funny idea.
That's awesome.
Our house needs to be burgled. Yeah.
It's a great way to get rid of some stuff.
There's a lot of stuff I don't need. Yeah.
Now, Peter, you have a book, a character in this. You have many books, but you have a character in this book who wants to do the big six of world marathons. Now, I've done two of them. I've done Boston and New York. I would love one day to run the London Marathon. You do some running yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Half marathon is my kind of distance.
Oh, that's a great
My wife, Laura, has done 22 marathons. She just did Berlin. She's trying to do the big six like you.
She did Chicago
last year.
Okay, great.
And doing Valencia in December. And she's done London several times. Her best time is 3:19 so far.
Wow,
that's really fast.
That's very fast.
Very good.
I have to have my character as the runner in the book, James Taylor. I made him a runner as you know, because I love it. I've run for years. It's my kind of thinking time.
Yeah. Do you listen?
Writing's very sedentary. It's great to actually just do something. People say to me about writer's block, and I just say, if you go for a run, it'll clear.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I had to squeeze one in before school today. I got to school like 1 minute before the bell rang. I quickly threw on this shirt and this hat. And I was in class, and they're like, "Dave, why is your t-shirt stained?" And I looked down, and there's like sweat. I thought, "Oh, it's not stained. That's just sweat. I just finished on the run." They're like, "Ah,
that is so gross."
Yeah. But they know, and I always come back. I tell them, you got to take whatever chance you get. You got to get out there, and it's just great to clear your head. It does so much for you mentally. People think it's a physical thing. It's much more of a mental thing.
Yeah, I got to. Pulled hamstring at the moment, so I've been swimming, and I've been going on a Peloton, and that's not
the same though, is it? It's not. I know I'm a runner. You're a runner. It's just not the same.
And also, you know, I've traveled around the world a lot on book promotion. I've been to so many cities, and if you can very easily just go in and out of airports and hotels. I have my trainers and my shorts. I get to see, I go out 7 in the morning and you see places. I got nearly arrested one time in Moscow for jogging.
What the hell is jade jogging?
Were you just cutting across the street and they don't care for that?
I was there on a book tour back in 2007 and I was out running and there was a street and I just thought, for a moment, there's no traffic. So I just ran across there. And these two cops hauled me up. They were yelling at me in Russian that I should have gone under the underpass.
Oh.
I hadn't seen.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, well, really, I honestly thought I was going to be kind of cuffed. You know, they don't take prisoners over there, as we all know.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not a place you want to be to get arrested.
No.
I would be shaking in my boots if that happened.
Yeah, I was doing my best to be polite and in the very limited Russian I knew.
I was wondering if you spoke any Russian.
About one word, which is Nastrovia, which is clinking glasses. It's cheers.
Really? Well, it's like a cheers. That's funny. That's a good word.
I was one time I was out for a run and there was like this big dirt hill. So I ran up this big dirt hill. And then, you know, I've hopped over many fences in my years of running, hopped over a fence. I'm running around. come down to a road. I'm running along the road, and a security vehicle comes up, and the guy stops me, and he informs me that I'm trespassing on prison property. So he's like, yeah, you need to get right back out there, or I'm going to take you right in here. So okay, all right, I'll get out of there.
I was in Washington,
yeah,
back in the mid '90s researching one of my earlier novels, and I ran across the Pentagon lawn.
Oh,
I don't think you can do that.
There were some people had a serious sense of humor failure there.
I bet. Oh, that's really funny.
I thought this looks a nice bit of grass to run over.
Yeah.
That the thing about DC, you don't know. Yeah, you don't know until you start hitting it, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So when the first bullet flies past you, that you know.
That's true. Did you, so you have death cap mushrooms as a poison in this book. As a writer, do you know a lot about how to poison and or kill people and not get caught? I feel like you do.
Peter knows.
I could commit the perfect.
Yeah.
Very easy. Dispose of the body. I mean, there's loads of ways to do it. The best thing is kill the person, freeze the body, then chop it into bits so you don't get blood.
Oh.
And to go on a ferry ride, drop a bit off here, a bit off there.
That is a good way.
Or feeding to pigs is a good one, which I did in a previous book. But I mean, we're all capable of committing murder. You, Dave, you, Laura.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure you've got a knife, you've got a hammer,
sure.
You've got some bin liners that just dispose of the body. What catches most killers is that they might commit the perfect murder, but it's living with their conscience. And at some point they have to tell someone. You know, you have a classic scenario. You've got like Bill's married to Wendy, and he falls in love with Anne. And rather than divorcing Wendy, which is going to cost them a lot of money and cause Wendy all kinds of emotional trauma, much easier to kill her, put her under the kitchen floor, re-cement it, and tell everyone she's gone off to live with her sister in New Zealand.
Wow.
And most people don't have a wide circle of friends.
Yeah.
True.
They have just a few. Boom, gone. But unless he's a psychopath, at some point he's going to have to tell someone. So he takes his mate Dave out. He says, "Dave, I murdered Wendy, but it's all right because I love Anne, isn't it?" And you say, "Pete, actually, it's not all right. Now you've told me I'm an accessory to murder. So one of us is going to have to go to the police."
Mm.
That's how the big normal people who just do it in a fit of pique or think they can get away with it, but don't. The psychopath can do that, and that's the dangerous person, and they've done it once, they've got away with it.
Yeah.
We just got some donations. I'm a theater teacher, so we got some old tools. I know there's a bunch of old saws down there. I got all kinds of weapons. Whenever I'm ready, I'm ready for murder. I'm always ready for murder. All right. Peter, it is time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions, which we find out just a little bit more. We've already learned a lot about. I mean, I had no idea we were going to learn this much about you in this interview. It's been amazing. But here's a few more for you, which we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Last show I watched or binged and really enjoyed, I guess, Succession.
So such a good. Mm-hmm.
Very well written. What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
What fictional world or place would I like to visit?
Yes.
That's kind of interesting because I tend to read books that are set in real places rather than fictional.
Go back in time.
I guess sort of world of King Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's a new King Arthur book out that I really enjoy by Lev Grossman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Really? Oh, it came out this summer. It's really thick. I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah, I forget. We talked to him about it.
It's Lloyd with a nasally voice. No. He's a really nice guy.
I don't remember his voice. Do you, Dave?
I know. I don't remember.
Does I have no memory of his
voice. Lloyd Grossman, yeah?
No, oh, Lev.
Oh, Lev.
Oh,
Lev.
Sorry. No, sorry.
Yeah.
Different one.
Lev, yeah.
We'll have to get him scheduled, though, too, so I can hear that voice. Now I'm curious about
his voice.
I'm sorry, Grass. It's a really lovely house I'm in.
How about this? Peter, give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
I would say, can I give you two?
Yeah.
Give us two. Casablanca, of course.
Oh, of course.
And I love Wages of Fear, the original Wages of Fear with Yves Montand, about two guys have to drive this truck full of nitroglycerin. And the slightest jolt could blow the whole thing up.
That's a good one.
It was remade some years ago, but not the original one was made in black and white back in, I think, the late 50s. It's called Wages of Fear. It's literally 95 minutes of heart pounding.
Wow.
Fear.
Wow.
Hey, that sounds great. We'll have
that's
to
really good. Yeah. That's a good premise. How about one of your favorite books or a couple favorite books?
Okay, I guess my two favorite books are, I always love Kurt Vonnegut. I love Slaughterhouse-Five.
Yeah.
I actually phoned him. I was at film school because I didn't think I'd ever make it as a writer. So I was at film school. I put that book down and he was in the phone book on Martha's Vineyard. And I phoned him and he answered.
Oh, gosh.
I was a sort of spotty little 19-year-old. I said, Mr. Vonnegut, I've just read your book. Slaughterhouse-Five. I'd love to buy the rights. And he said, "Gee, I sold them a couple of years ago. But I tell you what, give me your phone number, and if nothing happens, I'll get back to you."
Whoa!
Oh my God,
that was amazing. I was like, I couldn't believe it.
Wow! And I can't believe it.
And then the book that made me want to write crime mystery stories was Graham Greene's novel Brighton Rock, which was set in my hometown of Brighton, my home city of Brighton, where I grew up.
Wow.
I still think it has one of the best opening lines ever written, which is, "Within 3 hours of arriving in Brighton, Hale knew they meant to murder him."
Oh, that's good.
That's a good
one. To read on.
I get you. Yeah, that's a great one. How about this, Peter? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, I kind of. I mean, I have the world's worst voice, but I love.
You haven't heard me sing yet, so that's impossible.
San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
The streets. If you're going to San Francisco. Be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. I know it's a great dance song, but I love it.
That's a beautiful song. Yeah. I love that song.
If you're going to sing, you're going to know why I can't sing.
Oh, okay. Well, you and Lloyd Grossman should get together.
Yeah, you and Lloyd can do a duet.
First time I fell in love was that song.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, that's a beautiful song. I've always liked that song. I don't remember who wrote it.
I was a hippie at that time as well. I was just leaving school. It was that summer. And so I was wearing bells and I looked a complete dick. Long hair.
It is a hippie song. It is evocative of a certain time period.
It was that amazing summer of love, they called it.
Yeah.
When everything seemed, the world seemed such a hopeful place.
Yeah.
It does. I'm an optimist, but I mean, at that time there was that, I think we'd emerged from all the kind of darkness of the 50s and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Women's Lib was coming up and equal rights, all that. Oh, possible. Yeah. And now it doesn't. I'm just kidding. That's in our country though.
Right. That's over here.
Yeah. What book are you currently reading? Last question.
I am currently reading an early Michael Connelly, Black Echo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, I love his. It's one of the books of his I haven't read. So
that's the first one. I just read that one, actually.
Yeah, is it his actual first?
Yeah. That's his first. Well, it's his first Bosch book. I don't know if it's his first actual book.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just finished one. That's a really good one.
He writes so well, and he's also a really nice guy.
Is
oh,
he?
That's cool.
Peter, I got to show you this hat. This student just gave me this hat, so I got to show it to
you. Oh, my God.
I'm glad you didn't wear that for the interview.
I was like, I can't sit down with it, but I feel like we know him now, so I can wear it.
I think, you know, I can see it's got potential. You know, if you were going to an audience with the Queen, that would be a kind of thing.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, that's right.
She loves your books. Have you ever met her?
That's right.
Yeah, I've met her many times.
Wow.
Really?
You know, she, Queen Camilla, she started about, it was about 8 or 9 years ago. A friend of mine rang me out the blue. He said, whatever you're doing, stop doing it. Go out and buy a copy of the Daily Mail newspaper.
Oh.
And so I went out, I got a copy of the Daily Mail. And there on page 3 was, she was then the Duchess of Cornwall. And Camilla was sitting in her office, and there were 10 Roy Grace books behind her head. She said that I was one of her two favorite authors and her favorite crime writer. So I wrote to her and thanked her.
Yes.
And she wrote really nice, like 2-page letter back. And then I would send her each new book, and she'd always write to me. She'd say, it kept me company on my trip to Australia, this, that, and the other. And then she started the Queen's, what was called the Duchess's Reading Room. It's now called the Queen's Reading Room. And she has, it's on Instagram, and she takes an author and features them for 2 weeks.
Oh, great.
And she's absolutely, and I was one of the first authors she sort of took. And she came down when we were filming Grace, the television. She came down to the harbor where we were filming. And it was quite funny because the royal visit is very prescribed. So 11:05, her helicopter lands. 11:15, she arrives at the harbour side. From 11:20 to 11:50, she will interview upstairs in a warehouse.
Wow.
Then 11:50 to 12, she'll meet the cast and the crew. 12 to 12:10, she'll watch filming. Then she goes to private, she'll have her lunch, and she's off to her next appointment, which is a hospice. And so she arrived, and we go up to the warehouse and we do this interview, and she knows more. I mean, Queen Camilla knows more about my books than I do. I mean, she was asking me questions and we had a real laugh. And then, and she's with her entourage, you know, the ladies in waiting. And then I took her down to the meet the cast. Then we watched some filming, and at 10 past 12, I said, right, I'll leave you, Your Highness, to have your lunch. She said, no, come and join me. So I go back upstairs, and her lady waiting has got this big handbag. She opens it, and she gives Queen Camilla a thermos flask and a banana, and she pulls out a ham and cheese sandwich, which she gives to me. So I'm sitting there. We're on 2 wooden chairs, with a wooden packing case between us, chatting away like old mates.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow.
That is so, so cool.
What a day.
Peter, this has been a great chat. We have to go, but I absolutely loved your book. Yes. One of Us is Dead. We'd love to have you back on sometime. It's been a lot of fun.
Really nice to meet you both. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I'll give you a virtual ham sandwich.
Yeah. I got the thermos and the banana for, you know.
Yeah.
I
know.
Thank you.
Great to meet you. Thank you.
Bye.
The Inside
Flap. All right. There you go. That was Peter James. Thanks so much to him for hopping on. And thank you, listener, for tuning in to yet, we've done it again. It's just yet another perfect show. Can you believe it? We just keep cranking them out. And
so many things happened during this. We've even had to split up. We were together.
That's right. We started out this together.
And now...
A savvy listener might notice differences
in voices. Go to school.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Dave, you should really get to your job where you got to teach.
We're in the middle of recording this, and he's like, oh, I gotta go now. I gotta go. Right now.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Adios.
It's gonna be a crock of poo. Yeah.